This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
No, it's extremely important to keep your mental in the best place because that's where my game is played. My game's not played from my legs and not even just my arm. So I know longevity to all-time greats. What's Tom Brady's best trait? His mental. He's able to think. So if you have those traits of greatness and I know where I'm heading, then why wouldn't a franchise pick me? You got the ultimate cheat code.
That is Shedeur Sanders. Draft is less than a month away. That's from the Combine. What is Cleveland going to do? We'll get to it coming up here with Jonathan Peterlin. Morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off for the week. Nick Geary is in. There's a light dusting of snow on the ground. So apologies if you're just waking up to that news this morning. Susan Wenger from our sister station, WBEN, just tweeted out that this is going to be more bad news. So if you want to hear it, maybe, you know, walk away for 10 seconds. This snow might not be the latest that we get. It's March 26th. Last year, the latest snow in Buffalo was on April 5th. The year before, I don't remember this, but 2023, April 24th was the latest snow. So, you know, let's hope this is it. But maybe we have like a few more weeks of this. Need to get on the golf course. Anyways, let's get to the Western Hotline. Let's bring in Jonathan Peterlin from The Fan in Cleveland, 92.3. Thanks for joining the show. Hopefully there's no snow where you are.
I'm going golfing Saturday regardless. I've already decided. I didn't go last weekend because it was just a little bit too cold and windy, and I've just decided like it's supposed to be 60. If it's 60 or not, I'm going regardless.
Hey, if it's cold, you just get a little extra roll on the drives. The harder the ground, the longer your drive goes.
I can't do another week without doing it, so I'm going to just go, and I'm starting my season, and it could snow. I don't care. I'm going to be out there.
Yep. So Jonathan Peterlin, by the way, on the Western Hotline, if you want to follow him on Twitter, at J Peterlin. So the draft less than a month away. Russell Wilson to Cleveland. Right now, Jonathan, who would you make the favorite to be the Browns' week one starter? Would it be Kenny Pickett, just because he's on the roster?
So that's the hard part, right? If we're talking just on the roster, he'd be the only guy we could take right now because it's not going to be Deshaun Watson. Although, pay attention to that. Just pay attention to the idea that Deshaun is still on the roster. And although he won't be healthy in week one, if he ended up in a week 13 situation, if the Browns didn't take a quarterback number two overall, and then didn't get someone like Kirk Cousins. But if you made me guess, my guess right now is it's either Kirk Cousins for week one or it's Shedeur Sanders at week one. If you take a quarterback I'm of the belief you start him right away, kind of like you guys did in Buffalo, where it's like you throw Josh Allen in there, and then you get to get all the kinks out of the way as quick as you possibly can before heading off to greatness. But if they go Kirk Cousins, it would be with the idea that they take a quarterback in the second, third, fourth round, and then obviously Kirk Cousins would be the guy week one.
So what has it been like for you the last like few weeks then with that, through free agency and Russell Wilson visiting there, and probably thinking, when did this really change? The last 48 hours, maybe that number one and Cam Ward would have been a conversation, but now that seems like it's going to be the Titans.
Well, but then also you saw the Schefter report yesterday where all of a sudden Cam Ward potentially opened to trades at number one overall. It has been changing so much. I've been pretty adamant, guys. I like Shador Sanders. I think if you can't win with Shador, and you think Shador isn't good enough, then you're just going to be sitting there waiting forever for a quarterback because although he doesn't check all the boxes, and yes, he does have some flaws to himself, he is definitely a good enough quarterback to go ahead and take it number two overall. But like, I've seen so many people, if you didn't believe in Shador already, that is flip-flopped in many, many ways. They want Kirk Cousins. They want Shador. They then don't want Shador. It's a never-ending cycle of trying to read the tea leaves. And honestly, I'm sure you guys could discuss this at some point. The idea that not only just the national media, but the media in general right now around sports is so narrative pushed by the agents and by the teams that it just makes our head constantly spin if you don't believe what you actually believe.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, and with Sanders, that's more true than anybody, right? Like on both ends of it, you have, I feel like, some that are very critical of him because of who he is and his last name and how he carries himself. And then you might have guys on the other side where, you know, like some of these media guys are like really good friends with Deion Sanders. And how do you trust their honest opinion? So like when I think of Sanders, I don't know how you think of him. My concern would be more about the athletic traits than it is about the confidence and the character stuff. For me, I wouldn't care as much about that. It's just, does he have the arm strength and the mobility to make it in the league more than all the other stuff?
So my big response back to that, and it's a fair point, he is not flawless. He is not Peyton Manning out of the draft. He's not Andrew Luck out of the draft. Like, no one's trying to make him be that. But my only response back to that is simple. I feel like these draft Knicks, they want somebody that can hit a baseball 450 feet when the wall is 325 to left field. Like, he can play 40 yards and in. So much of the game, and why like Joe Burrow is great, is he plays the game 40 yards and in. And it was the longest pass he completed last year at Colorado, 46 yards. Yes, it was. Do you know how many 40-yard completions Drake May had last year? He had one. And like, you're all right, well, it's just Drake May. I mean, Drake May's got a big arm. He maybe just didn't use it. All right, how many out of 392 completions last year did Patrick Mahomes have that was 40 yards or greater? Six. Six. So, like, if you're going to not draft a guy based off of six throws a year, then I feel like you just got the wrong idea. And, again, it's not that he's perfect. No one's saying he's perfect. But if the game is played 40 yards and in and he's the most accurate quarterback in college football last year – he was second as far as passing yards, and he was fourth as far as passing touchdowns. He checks all the boxes 40 yards in, and that's really what I'd be concerned about.
So you like Sanders. Do you have a gauge right now, or is there any noise on what the Browns like at this point and whether they would like Sanders enough to pick him at number two?
I wish I could tell you, like, I emphatically know this, X, Y, or Z. The Browns really are the biggest wild card of the draft. They are so very tight-lipped. And on top of it, though, we talk about all the misinformation that just gets spread around. It is. I wish I was kidding. You guys know this. I do 5 hours a day on this topic. Every other day, it feels like I can confidently say Sanders to the Browns at two, and then I can turn around and be like, looks like they're going Kirk Cousins. It's funny. So, like, the guy I host with, his name is Nick Wilson, and he is staunchly against quarterback at number two. So it makes for a good, tug and pull, right? But the idea is that there have been, throughout the past couple months, there has been just as many days where he gets to roll into the office when we talk about ideas and be like, I got it now. They're not taking quarterback. I'm in the catbird seat, so to speak. And there's been just as many days where I'm like, it confidently seems like they're taking quarterback. In fact, just yesterday, it seemed like it was more likely than not they weren't taking quarterback off reports. And then the Russell Wilson news happens, and Russ shouldn't change what you do at all. But like walking in today, I'm thinking, okay, they're taking quarterback at number two. It's just, it's changing constantly.
Yeah, that's kind of what's happened here, right? Is that a lot of the veteran options have dried up, from Wilson and Winston, of course, both signing in New York. And right now, I mean, you mentioned Cousins, and even if he can get out of Atlanta, it sounds like he wants to. And Rodgers, who I've never seen Cleveland mentioned, and I don't think you probably want that. And that's kind of it, right? Like, if you're not going to draft a guy, it's Pickett, or, again, like, is Cousins maybe the only name that's left that would fit the profile of a veteran guy to come in?
Yeah, and think about it, guys. Like, if you're not drafting a guy, you're doing it on the base that you just don't believe in Shador Sanders and you're waiting for next year. I think it's incredibly hard if you're a GM and a head coach that's been in the league now going on year six, have not won at all, to say Kirk Cousins is going to save our job. Like, it just, like, make that make sense. That's the part I never really get along with, unless they just believe they got the longest leash in NFL history, which I don't know why they would.
Well, here's the thing, though. This is what makes it's almost similar to the conversation you're going to have in New York with the Giants right now, which is, you know, you bring back the coach, maybe reluctantly, and the GM. It's not like there is a situation unfolding here where this roster is in a position to contend. So how do you even judge this, you know, regime at Andrew Berry and, you know, the head coach Stefanski, like, with the offense that they're likely going to run out? Like, let's say right now Kirk Cousins doesn't happen. Kind of seems like it could be Kenny Pickett or a rookie going out there with Jerome Ford, Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, and Michael Woods right now listed as your top four weapons on offense. It seems like far closer to a middling, like your goal is maybe middling, which I just, in the NFL right now, I can't imagine anyone's in a good situation thinking best case scenario is middling.
Yeah, no, it's a great point by you. And that's part of the problem, though, is that they haven't made any sort of moves that suggest that they're trying to push any chips in the middle of the table. They haven't made any sort of moves that suggest they're trying to do anything but get that 7, 8, 9 wins. But they desperately need to not replicate what happened last year. This is a lot of – the reality is it is a lot of the ramifications of having what is one of the worst trades of all time in Deshaun Watson and some of the fallout. And so if they're playing with the idea that they're not going to be great next year and they're playing for maybe 2026 instead of 2025, I can see the long view, but it's really hard to sell that to the fans. And let's be honest, Jimmy Haslam, the owner, has been incredibly patient throughout this stretch, but my patience would run thin with back-to-back three-win seasons. I would be done with it.
Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, is with us on the Wester Hotline. You mentioned Watson again there. You said earlier, like, maybe if they don't draft a guy, like, late in the season, he's coming off the torn Achilles. Do you think, though, it's more likely he has started his last game in Cleveland? And when can they... They can't right now, I don't think, but when can they get out of that contract?
So I would say like 90% of people believe that he'll never play again in a Browns uniform. The reason why I phrased it the way I did, and this is not a talking point that we do often because it just makes all the fans mad anytime you bring up Deshaun Watson, it just wouldn't surprise me if you got to like week 14 and the quarterback room exists with some sort of really bad trio, and then all of a sudden Deshaun just kind of gets ushered into a game. That's the only reason why I bring it up. He will never play in a game that matters. He will never play. It'll be the type of we're already turning the page on the season and we're done with it. And then he just kind of gets thrown in there because you're paying him $46 million and you're just going to make him basically dance for his dollar in that regard. The earliest, realistically, the earliest the Browns can be done after this latest restructure is March of 2027. So I would imagine he's going to be on the roster the next couple of years just from cap reasons, like he's forced to be. Now, he might end up being inactive on game day, but he'll actually have to be on the roster for cap reasons because they've spread this out. And really, I mean, this contract has killed the Browns in many ways, but it hasn't destroyed them because they've been able to constantly restructure.
Right. They've been kind of pushing it along. We both made the same reaction, like March of 27.
You know, though,
so
and,
far
and here's
off.
Here's the crazy thing, right? Like, and I know this is not we're not talking about the same thing here, but the Bills in their Super Bowl window didn't spread out or restructure the Diggs contract. They just ate it, and they just said we're going to take a big one year penalty, and then look out on the other side of this.
But like that's $30 million. Like I don't know if you would know the number off the top of your head, Jonathan. But like I'm imagining the Watson number is something you just
it would be historic.
You can't do it.
It'd be historic.
It'd be historic, yeah. Last I looked at it, before the latest restructure, I think if you just ate it, it was like $120 million.
Yeah, like you can't do that.
But it's 1 year, right? Like it's not multiple years that you'd have to eat that?
Yeah.
It's 1 year.
Like if you did it in one full swing. But the problem with that, though, is that, and like there was the suggestion before they did this latest restructure about whether or not you could kind of like just like take a poison pill and just do it all this season and just really just make, but it's just not reality. You just can't do that.
Jonathan Peterlin with us on the Wester Hotline. So on the roster overall, Nate just kind of went through it a little bit. What I thought of them 2 years ago, I liked them a lot. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I had one take with that with them because I loved the offensive line and I loved the defense and I thought their weapons were good enough. How does that stand now? Like the line being great and where the defense is, Garrett is back. Is the rest of it still pretty good with some holes, or are those things maybe not as good as they were a couple years ago?
Guys, offensively, I don't know how they're going to score. Like, I mean, I'm hoping that Shador's the pick, and then we can elevate this team a little bit. Browns fans are holding out for a Brandon Ayuk trade still. Like, there are things that has to happen, but think about it from this perspective. They've not done anything in re-signing or replacing Nick Chubb yet, so I would imagine that's going to come through the draft. Your number one wide receiver, Jerry Jeudy, took a massive step forward last year. But if Jerry Judy's your one, you still have some problems. The offensive line, you got four guys that are now 30 years and older, and they're not trending upward in any sort of direction. They were the worst offense from a scoring standpoint in the NFL last year. But offensively, I'm worried. Defensively, I'm not that worried. Defensively, I think they'll be more than fine. They're going to be all right. But offensively, I just don't know how they're going to score points.
I want to ask about Myles Garrett because, you know, his Bills stint didn't last too long. But there was a lot of optimism here in Buffalo from fans and I mean, even players, right? I mean, you heard Deion Dawkins making national pleads, essentially, like, hey, go get Myles Garrett. And then he ends up signing. But it to me, the lead up to the extension, spoke way more to this breakup is coming. I mean, there are reports that he was trying to meet with Jimmy Haslam but didn't want to meet with him. And then, like, he, you know, writes out a statement, like, I want to be traded. I'm done. And I just wonder, like, from the Browns' perspective of this whole thing, re-signing a 28-year-old, don't get me wrong, probably best defensive player in the league right now, considering where they are and the things that team needs to find competitiveness again, I don't know. It seemed like a short-sighted decision amongst a list of other really short-sighted decisions this franchise continues to make. And I think maybe it's just we can't keep losing, you know, these cornerstone pieces on our team. So this is where we draw the line with Myles Garrett. But I don't know. To be honest, I don't think the extension and subsequent, hey, he's here for now for the long term, makes sense for either side.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things happening here. From Myles' perspective, he got boxed in. I believe he was 100% truthful when he went on Radio Row and he said what he said about the Browns and needing a quarterback and not being a very good team and all that stuff. I believe 100% he believes that. I've known Myles for 8 years. I think he was 100% honest there. I think he realized he had no out, hence why he got a no-trade clause in his new contract and set himself up if he ever wanted to do this. I don't know, let's even say a year from now. I'm fully convinced he believed what he said. He just got boxed in. He overplayed his hand a little bit. He thought it was the NBA, and you could just kind of dictate terms, and it's just not. From the Browns' perspective, what's interesting to me is the insistence from this front office that this isn't baseball. That's their terms, not mine. This isn't baseball, and it doesn't take 5 years to turn something around. So I believe they think that they're really, really close. Now, obviously, talking to you guys think that they're pretty far away. I would agree with you guys. I think they're pretty far away. But they don't think that way. It's crazy, but they don't think that way. In fact, last year, a team that won 3 games, while trying to win, by the way, they weren't tanking. They were trying to win before the season and even during the season at times. I had people tell me that when they talked to people in that front office, they thought that was a championship team. Like, so maybe they're just delusional. I'm not sure. But they really think that they're like knocking on the doorstep and could do this way quicker than a lot of people think they can.
Well, then how much would you value, I guess, self-awareness in an ownership and leadership group? Because I think
it a lot.
Right. And I asked the question because I wonder how much the fans view that as like an important trait you need to have for winning teams is knowing when the towel needs to be thrown in and knowing when maybe one or two moves are needed or this move's needed. Like, to me, the delusion definitely appears real. And It, to me, it's why it's like the conversation around, do you just eat the $120 million and just say, screw it, and then bring in the coach? I don't know. It just seems like there's more of a self-fulfilling prophecy than there's actually a roster that's capable of winning in the real world in the NFL.
Well, I think you touched on a great point and something that I think is very evident in this draft, how the Browns go about it, right? Because if they take Shador at number two, a lot of the fan base will be looking at it as, well, he's not worth number two, and this is you guys trying to put a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, and this isn't going to work out. Like, this is you guys thinking that you're a quarterback away when you're not a quarterback away. And conversely, if they actually do what I think you're suggesting, or what I think what a lot of the listeners to this segment can at least gather, is just, you know, punt on this year, take Kirk Cousins at least, and maybe get something that's, you know, 5, 6, 7 wins and play for next year. That might be the better actual strategy to use for a long-term standpoint. But you guys know how this goes. They're in year six. Like, you just don't have forever. And so maybe it's just a fool's mindset that they have. But Andrew Berry, he's very, very smart. He's a lot of things, but he's very, very smart. And I think he knows you just don't get forever with these jobs when you've had one playoff win going into year six.
Yeah. But last thing for you, and then we'll let you go. Because I'm a little more positive on them than maybe Nate is. Not too much. Like, I don't think they're in store for a great campaign coming up. But part of that for me is that I do like the coach. I have liked Stefanski a lot. I mean, coach of the year. But is that, I guess, where does he stand in your eyes at this point? He's been here, been there a long time. And then also what his job security would be. Like, if they win six games, is that it for him?
So I look at them like Bert and Ernie. They're a package deal. Berry and Stefanski go together. I like Stefanski. I'm like you in that I like Stefanski. I am more and more on the minority locally than what it ever has been, for sure. He lost a lot with a lot of people last year. There's no doubt about that. And so that's why this year is important. He's got to show people that he can be that quarterback whisperer that everyone kind of tabbed him to be. And so will he eventually show us that? Sure, right, maybe. But right now he's coming across way more like a real dollar store version of Kyle Shanahan that he actually is some sort of Kevin O'Connell, Sean McVay. So one of these guys that can take, you know, basically anyone and turn him into something.
All right. Jonathan Peterlin on the Western Hotline. At least you have the Cavs right now.
Yes,
we do.
That's fun to watch. Yeah.
Although they're now, we have to like watch the rest of this regular season when everyone just wants to talk about the postseason.
Right.
But that's a different story for a different time.
That's literally what we do with the Bills like every November, is we're just talking about the playoffs for the last 7 weeks. Thanks.
That sounds like a nice dream.
Yeah. Thanks for joining, Jonathan. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 The Fan, at Jay Peterlin. You want to follow him on Twitter, all the good Cleveland takes. You are very anti-Browns right now. Which I'm not saying that's not deserved.
I feel like I'm just realistic Browns.
Yeah.
Their roster stinks. So funny because I think you would have said 2 years ago, I think it was when you said you were high on them.
That 2 years ago, I got to escape that, because 2 years ago, I thought their roster was a quarterback away from Super Bowl contender.
But it wasn't just you. A lot of people said this is a Super Bowl roster and without a quarterback.
I think they kind of proved that, didn't they? They had they played four different quarterbacks and made the playoffs.
Yeah.
The defense was number one in the league. The line was number one in the league. But as we kind of just went through with him, like, the line's aging. The line's not number one in the league anymore. And the defense might still be pretty good, but the defense isn't number one in the league anymore. And the offense has gone from, you know, pretty good to, is it one of the worst in the league?
Yeah.
Right away? So, yeah, they're not what they were even 2 years ago. 803-0550 is the phone number. Cleveland, I think the one lesson that I learned from that whole thing is that they're the team I'm thinking about most in the draft right now. The draft starts with them at number two. We think it's going to be Cam Ward at number one, and Cleveland could go quarterback. They could go Travis Hunter. They could go Abdul Carter. They could go line. They could do anything at number two. When we come back, Paul Hamilton joins the show. We'll change gears, get to some hockey. The Sabres winning last night over Ottawa. Lindy Ruff's 600th win. We'll get to that when we come back here on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Sabres get the win last night over the Ottawa Senators, who are in a playoff spot, but they're not safe yet, so that's a big loss for them. Get to last night's game. Get to some individuals as well. Lindy Ruff winning his 600th game as well. We now bring on Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Paul, hopefully, I don't know. There's probably a little bit of snow where you are. There's a light dusting, though.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, it's not great. Not great. So from last night's game, Paul, they get the win. I kind of wanted to start with you on the tribute video, like half kidding about it. Was it weird at all that they split the video between Gilbert and Cousins? Like, were you expecting that, or is it not a big deal?
Yeah, it was a little weird, I think. Just because Gilbert hadn't been there that long, and Cousins had. So it was mostly Cousins. It was just a little bit of Gilbert in there in the middle of it.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maybe, you know, 15, 20 seconds or something. So it mostly was. I don't really worry about that stuff all that much, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, it was a nice thing for Cousins, and I saw some people were upset about it on Twitter and stuff, and that's fine. But as I said, I don't worry about that stuff all that much.
Yeah, it was right, even half kidding about it, because he still got the video and the most of it anyway. So they get the win, and a goal by Jacob Bernard Docker, which, you know, he's wearing the number 24, so that's kind of funny too. He scores against his former team. I know he spoke to the media after the game too, Paul. What have you seen from him so far? He's kind of the throw-in to the trade, but, you know, we've seen some nice things so far. The shot was a nice one, right? Posting in, so probably a pretty cool moment for him.
Yeah, a goal and two assists. He almost seemed embarrassed talking about it. It's like, well, guys, that's really not me.
Yeah, don't expect the point of the game.
He's not Bobby Orr or anything like that. I mean, it just has happened that, you know, he got two assists the other day and then wound up with a goal in this game. But, you know, he wanted to caution people. Don't expect that he's going to turn into Rasmus Dahlin or something offensively. So, but you know what? He's been pretty solid. And the thing I think that almost is a little surprising is he hadn't played a game since December 28th. Mm-hmm. And I think in all three games that he's played, he's just been a solid D. You know, nothing spectacular, but he hasn't made too many glaring errors or anything like that. And he just, you know, has played a solid D for him, which is what they need. I mean, they need somebody to come in and play good defense, because that's something they haven't been able to do a lot of this year. So, you know, I've liked what I've seen so far. I just think, you know, he's steady. You don't really notice him all that much, which is good, because you're not sitting there going, what are you doing here? Why'd you make that play or something like that? I mean, he just, you know, is a steady influence out there.
Paul, let me ask you about Zach Benson. Saw some elevated play on the top line with Kulik and Tage Thompson, and, you know, the Thompson goal in that game. I mean, start to finish really feels like it's all facilitated from Benson himself. He had a couple of other great plays. One of his shots, turnover in the offensive zone, and gets a quick shot on goal. Like, I just, whether or not Benson is going to see more of this role on the top line with Tage Thompson, you know, for the final 12 games or so, it doesn't, I guess for me, the thing that I appreciate about Zach Benson is he's kind of one on the roster. There's not a lot of other guys that are willing to do what he does. You know, get in front of the net, tries to go to the corners and win battles. I mean, on the shift, he won like two different battles, gets a steal, and makes a great pass to Tage, who's waiting in front of the net. Like, is that something you'd like to see them experiment with maybe for the remainder of the season to see what he looks like in more of an impact role?
You know, he gets that opportunity now and then on that line or on a different line, and they just bounce him around the lines. He doesn't necessarily, you know, have a home when it comes to the lines. So it just, you see him in different places. It's usually not center, but on either wing. And the thing is, you know, I always say to myself, he's 19, but he was a big scorer in junior. You know, 36 goals, 98 points in 60 games his last year with the Winnipeg Ice. And, you know, that's one of the reasons the Sabres, of many, that they made him the 13th overall pick in 2023. And I always wonder to myself, well, is that going, you know, as he gets a little bit more mature and a little bit stronger, is that scoring going to carry over for him? It's just like, look at that first goal he scored last year. You know, it was just a gorgeous goal. Yeah. He kind of pulled the puck behind, and you know, it was just like a slick goal that he wound up scoring. So it makes you wonder. It doesn't seem like maybe he's going to have quite as many points this year. Maybe like last year he had 11 goals and 19 assists for 30 points. This year he has 10 and 14 for 24. So he might not have quite as many. But, you know, you also measure what he does. Like, he's always winning battles against guys who are bigger than him, because almost everybody in the NHL is bigger than him. But look at the battle he won on that goal that you just talked about. Zetterlund behind the net. He just goes in there, and it wasn't even a close battle. I mean, he just went in there, dominated the battle. Comes up with the puck, finds Thompson in front, gives him a nice pass, and it's in the net. So that his motor's always running. You know, he's always making the other team mad. I mean, he's one of those rats on the ice. If he's not in the middle of something, he gets there fairly quickly and gets in the middle of it. You know, so it's interesting, and I just wonder what his ceiling is going to be. You know, as a player, he's only 19. You know, when he gets stronger in 2 years or 3 years, what kind of player is he going to be? Is the offense going to come for him? You know, it's going to be interesting to see as he grows.
Yeah, because you see, Paul, like, he gets opportunities, and there's a lot of instances where, you know, another player you might think, okay, just walk in and shoot it. And Benson, he very often will pass up good shot opportunities, but it's probably because he's smart enough to know that he doesn't really have a very good shot right now. And you do kind of see that. And that's kind of impossible to know right now, isn't it? That his ceiling is going to be reliant on how good is he going to be at finishing these chances and consistently being these playmaking areas too, offensively, like he does last night with Thompson. And I don't know if there's a good way to gauge that until we kind of see what his body's like. You know, like how much stronger can he get? How much, you know, bigger? And he already wins battles at an amazing rate for his size. You know, it's to me just more about how much better can he be at finishing and in some of those traits.
There was a play last night that exactly what you're talking about. The Ottawa coughed the puck up in the middle right to him, and he came down the slot and took a shot. But it wasn't. You know, it wasn't a shot that it was like, oh, wow, it almost scored there. You know, it just was kind of a normal shot that he did. And you know, at least he took the shot because he was open and came down the slot. It was actually a nice pass by the Senators right to him. You know, he took the shot, but it kind of illustrated what you're talking about. The shot really wasn't close to being a goal.
Paul Hamilton with us. Paul, another strong effort by James Reimer. His numbers on the season look pretty good. There's two good games back-to-back. And is that the first time all year they would have played him in two consecutive games? Like, do you feel like they might just keep rolling with him as long as he's playing well?
Yeah, they played him 3 out of 4. He stopped 90 out of 98 shots. You know, and done a really nice job. I mean, he faced over 30 shots in all three starts. So, if they were 4 points out of the playoffs, yeah, Reimer should be starting, and they should be riding him right till it, you know, it doesn't work anymore. But I don't see where they are in the standings right now. I just don't see the point of it. He's 37 years old. And he's earned it, and I know you should get what you earn, but for where the franchise is right now, I just don't see how that helps the Buffalo Sabres. I think Luukkonen has got to play, and you hope that maybe he can, you know, figure out how to get himself back to where he was last year. And you know, Lukanen and Levi are the future, and it's not James Reimer at 37 years of age. So from where the Sabres are right now, and you know, I just don't see the point of using a lot of James Reimer, and I think you have to let Lukanen get in there and see if he can get himself back to where he was last year.
Yep. Lindy's 600th win with the Sabres last night, Paul, only the second coach ever to do that, Al Arbor, the other. And he got into a little bit in postgame about kind of the future. Did he sound to you like saying that he wants to get it right, getting the franchise turned around, and kind of reflecting on this season a little bit too, that he might sound like he's ready to do this again next year? Because I know that's been a question with fans, like, will he even want to do it again next year? And did he sound to you at all like he's gonna wanna?
Yeah, his quote was, you know, he said, "I'm a guy from day one that always thinks I can fix everything, and I haven't been able to fix everything, and it's been a disappointment for me." And then he said, "I really want to get this right and to turn this around." And, you know, I know he dearly would love to win a championship for Buffalo. I mean, this is his home now. And it has been since he was a coach the first time, even when he left. And, you know, he would still come back here in summertime. And you know, he would dearly love to win a championship here. And it really grates on him. You can tell just all year long that this is grated on him. That, well, using his words, he hasn't been able to fix this. And, you know, he feels that they've made some progress recently, and, you know, as he said, he wants to get this right, and he wants to get this turned around. And so, yeah, he does sound like a guy that wants to, quote, finish the job.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Thank you, Paul. Opening day tomorrow. What are the Yankees' vibes? Is it not good because of Cole?
Yeah, and, you know, they've lost a good bat in Stanton. They've lost Cole. Yeah, that's not good vibes at all. Well, there have been a few games played. They were not in this country.
Right.
Right. The opening day for everybody else is coming up.
Yeah, do we still call tomorrow opening day even though the season began a week ago?
That's why I've been hearing people talk about opening day, and I'm saying, well,
they already opened.
Yeah, okay, opening day in North America, we could say that.
Right.
But yeah, they've already had kind of opening day.
Right. 3:05 tomorrow for Brewers and Yankees. Thank you, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. The Sabres will play Ovechkin in the Capitals this weekend as he still sits 6 goals away from the record. Next up for the Sabres, though, is going to be tomorrow night against the Penguins, who have had a terrible season. And they've tried a lot to win.
Veterans, they have definitely
Carlson,
tried.
And their season has completely gone off the rails. The Sabres, by the way, bottom of the standings. I don't think this year really matters all that much for this, because there might be a break in the draft around like 4 or 5, depends who you talk to on that. Right now, the Sabres are 4th from the bottom in the NHL. And again, like, first overall might not be that much different than 3rd or 4th. They're 4th from the bottom. They're 1 point back of Philly and 2 points back of Seattle. So they could very easily get to 6th from the bottom. Again, this is not like a lottery that's worth rooting for them to lose these games. But
I would argue,
at this point, you might still just rather they finish first.
I'd like them to have a higher pick, and they absolutely should not use it. They should trade it.
Top 5
trade
pick?
The damn pick.
Don't we say that every year and they never actually do it, though?
No, they never do it, but they should trade the damn pick.
They should. I agree with that. 803-0550 is the phone number. A anniversary for the Sabres. 10 years since a very infamous night that was that took place in the arena. Get to that when we come back.
Moore keeping it in there to Ekman Larson. He slides it off for Gagne. Ripped it into the net. So he was foiled earlier in the game. Not this time. And in overtime, Arizona wins it.
Happy 10-year anniversary to the Tank Bowl. Sabres and Coyotes at then First Niagara Center. Coyotes win in overtime. Saber fans cheer because it was massive in the tank race. And I believe they talked about it on Pardon the Interruption the next day, because my picture was on Pardon the Interruption because I was sitting three rows under the Pray for McDavid sign. That was a crazy night to be in that building. Crazy night. It was sold out. I looked it up today. The attendance was 19,000. Everyone was very happy leaving. Which, hey, mock it if you want. That's a rare occurrence these days. Leaving the building happy. Mike Weber got very mad in postgame. I remember that. Very mad that fans cheered against it. Or against them. My brother wore a paper bag over his head with a smiley face. As to say, it was on purpose, of course.
Little did we know what was going to happen 2 months later.
Then 10 years went by and they still haven't made the playoffs. Yeah. 10 years since the Tank Bowl. You at that game?
No.
Definitely not?
No.
It was a great game to be at. Great game to be at. It was an interesting game to be at, to say the least. Everyone had their tank signs and different cutouts, whatnot. Sam Gagne is the one who scored the overtime game-winning goal that night. Yeah, it's been 10 years since the tank, and they're still here. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. It is. It's just, there's no other way to put it into perspective. Will they get there first, or will the Jets get there first? Two longest, they put the graphic up I saw on ESPN yesterday. Longest two droughts in sports, Buffalo Sabres and New York Jets. They're both going to be at 14 years. Who makes it first? You want to say Sabres, I think.
I'm having a tough time getting there.
I mean, the Jets are going to do what? Justin Fields? Come on. Cool that he's getting an opportunity to start, but he's just not a good passer at all. So, in theory, it's easier to make the playoffs in hockey. I know we haven't really, you know, it's hard to make that argument here lately. But everywhere else, it is easier to make it in hockey than it is in football.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll go Sabres. More like the Sabres get there first before the Jets do.
I don't think the Jets are getting there this year. Obviously, the Sabres aren't getting there this year.
So, that means next year they would have to get in.
Yeah.
And then it would be over first. 803-0550.
Depressing to think about, to be honest.
Got some mock draft stuff to get to when we come back. We're under a month away from the NFL draft. The top of the draft is very interesting, not just where the Bills are picking, of course, at 30, but what the teams at the top do as well. So some draft talk when we come back. Your phone calls at 803-0550. Joe, if you hang on hold, we'll get to you right when we come back. Stay tuned. This is WGR.